Joining us on the line now from the UK is award-winning TV writer and producer Ian Brown, who's worked with the best in the business. Harrison Ford, Tom Jones, Simon Cowell, Bruce Forsyth, and even Homer Simpson. Alongside This Is Your Life, Comic Relief, Strictly Come Dancing, and Top Gear. He's with us on The Book Show to talk about his debut picture book. It's called Albert Upside Down. Despite working with a raft of stars for over 30 years, Ian's dream has always been to write for children. And Albert Upside Down was inspired by the adventures of real-life Greek tortoise Albert, who was rescued more than 50 years ago and has lived happily with Ian's family ever since. Welcome to The Book Show, Ian.
Thank you very much indeed, Hannah.
It's great to have you with us. And what an interesting life you've had.
Well, I've been a very lucky chap. That's all I can say, and I do say. It took me a long time to get into television. You obviously mentioned in your introduction, my long-held dream to write children's books, but it was also a long-held dream to work in television, and I did that via journalism. Many years ago, I wrote then, before the internet, before email, before all that sort of thing, I wrote a handwritten letter, which was very scrappy indeed, to the BBC, sort of saying, here I am, come and get me. And to my amazement, they didn't reply, which was, outrageous at the time. Outrageous. Anyway, eventually I invested in a typewriter, and many letters later I did get called in to what was then, I think, the personnel department, they called it then. And a very nice chap advised me that if I wanted to get into TV production, one way to do it was journalism. So I then went away and became a journalist. I went to journalism college and then worked on local papers, then was the very tail end of Fleet Street on national papers as a sub-editor and sometime reporter, and then got into television through news and current affairs and such like. So I did sort of work my way in. So I do say I'm lucky, because I then got onto shows that I was able to stay on, and they had long runs, and I did get to work with some amazing people. I probably put words into the mouths of almost every household name people can think of, pre-reality television.
Yeah. Gosh, that's amazing. I mean, you say lucky. Yes, lucky, but you worked awfully, awfully hard to get there.
I did. I kind of persevere, I suppose, which is partly the backstory to the book, Albert Upside Down, as well, because if you think about it, I suppose a tortoise is representative of, keep it steady, keep on trying, persevere. And I suppose I do. I always say that writing for television, I make more changes than I actually write, because you present something, whether I've written a joke or I've written a sketch or I've written, links for a show, or I've written a whole documentary about the birth of Prince George, about the royal family and such like, whatever I've done, or stuff for the South Bank show. But you present it, and then there are various levels of command that will all have an opinion, producers, executive producers and such like. So you make lots, and also the presenters, I should say, as well, have their own way of doing things. So you make a lot of changes. So I'm fairly, I suppose, thick-skinned in that regard, but I do persevere, I suppose. That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. You must have some great stories, though, working with all these big stars. Any that spring to mind?
There's a few. I mean, it's just name-dropping, really, I suppose.
Well, it's fine. I've asked you, so it's perfectly acceptable.
I will name-drop, but I got to play tennis with Charlton Heston. I suppose it's quite a big moment.
Wow.
In that, we did his This Is Your Life, and he, it turned out, thoroughly enjoyed it, and luckily. And the very next day, he called me at the hotel where we were all staying, the production team, and he said, you want to come to the house? So I went to his house. Now, I had been there before in secret, because I'd been there to see his wife, Lydia, and to sort of raid their photo album to get photos of the show and to get stories from her and all that sort of thing. And but I was invited to the house, and he was ready to play tennis, and and I kind of wasn't. So I muddled through, and he was a great tennis player, I have to say. He wasn't that young then, and his knees had gone, and I think his back had gone pretty much. But he thrashed me. Obviously, I would have let him win anyway, but he thrashed me. So that was the score there. But so, yeah, you know, lots of memories, actually. You know, I've done road trips with Jeremy Clarkson and the Top Gear people, and I've done all sorts of things. Sometimes it blurs a bit. Nowadays, of course, the benefit of YouTube is that every now and then I will be scrolling through something on YouTube and a thing pops up, and it's a thing I either wrote or produced or worked on, and I go, crikey, I'd forgotten I'd done that, and I watch it, and I genuinely, sometimes, I have no memory of the content of it or the specific content of it at all. So it's a very pleasant experience. It's like I'm watching something for the first time.
Yeah. And have you ever worked or even done work for one of your heroes, anyone that you thought, my goodness, I can't believe I'm writing for him?
It's slightly obscure. It's one possibly for jazz fans, but I'm going to say the name George Shearing, who was a blind jazz pianist. His classic track was Lullaby of Birdland, and he created a particular sound, which was piano and vibraphone and drums and such like. And he is the chap who is in the background, if you like, on Nat King Cole singing Let There Be Love.
Wow.
So everyone
okay.
knows that. Yep. Anyway, so he was born in Battersea, when Battersea was quite a rough area, as was my mum and dad, So that show, when we paid tribute to him on This Is Your Life, and I then did a South Bank show about him as well, was quite special because the early part of his life and meeting his sisters and such like, it was all about going back to my parents' roots. And my dad, in fact, was a great jazz fan and had introduced me to the music of George Shearing years before. So it was an amazing sort of link up of, you know, things to do with my parents and my their family and his family, and the fact that he was a hero to my dad, and he was a bit of a hero to me as well. And it was a great show, I have to say. The ending was him playing Lullaby of Birdland with the great French jazz violinist Stephane Grappelli and Johnny Dankwith on saxophone. And it was just a very magic show, I have to say. And although it's a little bit obscure, you know, not quite a household name maybe, but that certainly resonated.
Yeah, definitely. I missed This Is Your Life. That was just the best programme.
It was fun to do, I have to say. Hard work, I would have to say as well. You know, it was 26 shows per series. So one, you had to find all those people to pay tribute to. Now, often, that was, half a series probably was soap operas, so we'd always visit EastEnders, Coronation Street, Emmerdale, Holby, Casualty, The Bill when it was running, all those sort of shows. And then you'd visit any other big shows. So, for example, at the moment, we'd probably be visiting, like, you know, if we could, anyone out of Line of Duty or such like, you know. So you would have obvious targets that you'd want to pay tribute to. But then you'd also visit, you know, lifeboat service or paramedics or fire service people. So, you know, there was a broad spectrum, but you still had to put them together. And it was, as I say, 26 shows per series. I worked on it for nearly 20 years, I suppose. But it was an epic show. It ran forever. You know, it started in the 1950s. It ran for a while. The BBC then thought they'd done everybody. Yeah. It had a break. And then it came back in 1969 in colour. And they did Des O'Connor, This Is Your Life. And it ran constantly from that point onwards to about 2004, I think, or something like that. And then we came back again to do a one-off Simon Cowell hour special for ITV, and Trevor MacDonald hosted that one. And it was a bit of landmark television, really.
I remember watching it growing up, and most of the time, being that I was a child watching it, I didn't know the people who were featured. It was a great joy when it was somebody who came on that I knew, but a lot of the time I didn't know who they were, but still really, really was fascinated and enjoyed watching the reactions of when the family members would come in and the people that they'd worked with in the past. And I suppose it kind of resonates with people in the same way as to why we like reading biographies or autobiographies. We like to know people's journeys, how they got to where they are, that kind of thing.
Well, absolutely. It was before, obviously, the internet age. So it was before Instagram, and it was before YouTube, and it was all those things where people now of a certain celebrity status, I suppose, share everything.
Yeah.
I suppose the people you would call out for that would be the Kardashians, the Osbournes, and such like, where everything, you know, their lives were put on camera or on film.
Mm.
And then immediately prior to that, the magazines like Hello Magazine and OK Magazine would have been the first sort of areas of going into people's lives and their homes and such like. And it was another era. You know, we were, This Is Your Life was probably at the time the only TV show where you would find out what a famous person's wife or their parents would look like.
Yeah.
You know, unless you bought, as you say, unless they had done a biography or had a biography written about them.
Yeah, exactly. Before the internet and all of that, we had no idea about that stuff. That's why it was so compelling. And I guess, sadly, that's why it maybe wouldn't work as well now, because we'd sort of feel we already know everything about them.
Absolutely. I mean, it would have to be different.
Yeah.
It would have to sort of adapt to the modern times, where we almost know everything about everybody via social media or, you know, other magazines now that publish all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And it would, as I say, it would have to adapt, certainly.
So let's talk about Albert. Albert the tortoise has been with your family for 50 years. Is that right?
He has, in a sense, in that he was found 50 years ago or so by my wife when she was a little girl. I won't go into too much detail, but he was found tied up, unfortunately, to a garage door near their home. They took him in and put out appeals. You know, does anyone claim this tortoise? No one came forward. So he became the family pet, and he's been part of the family ever since. and we took him on about 15 years ago. So I will very quickly just say, Hannah, if I may, if anyone is considering a tortoise as a pet, one, do seek expert advice, because there's lots you have to know. They're quite a they're a simple pet in many ways, but they're a complicated pet in many other ways, because these days you probably have to invest quite heavily in equipment like heat lamps and such like.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, you also have to think about the longevity of them. A tortoise just like Albert lived in the UK to be 160 years old.
Wow.
Now, we've been told that Albert is about 80, possibly.
Gosh.
So you have to think about the legacy.
These and days, commitment.
Absolutely. I mean, these days we talk about the legacy. You have to keep in mind all your passwords for your social media and your eBay and your Amazon and all your things online. Who are you going to leave those passwords to? Otherwise, they're completely locked out of everything that you had. You have to think about the legacy of a tortoise. Who will you pass that tortoise to when the time comes? You know, you have to think about that.
Wow. So has I don't know an awful lot about tortoises. Tortoises or tortoise-eye? How would you say it? Tortoises.
I would say tortoises, yes. Pretty much.
do they grow much, or has he looked the same the whole time you've had him, would you say?
They grow a lot. They hatch from eggs, and they're tiny when they first appear, absolutely tiny. You know, if people think of their cousins, turtles, hatching on beaches or whatever, on all the nature programs, yeah, no, they're tiny when they come out. Even the giant tortoises, the Galapagos or the Aldabra, which you see on nature programs as well, they are all tiny when they come out. Now, Albert himself is a Greek spurfly, probably originally from North Africa, actually, and you know, back then, when he was found, you know, or some years before he was found, they were shipped into the UK en masse, unfortunately, in not a good way, I'll put it like that. And, you know, people didn't know too much about them, but they were a sort of an exotic pet, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And we know a lot, you know, people know a lot more about them now, about the importance of their shell. And, you know, back then, you know, even a program like Blue Peter for children used to advocate painting your phone number on the tortoise shell. And of course, back then it would have been full-on lead paint.
Oh.
And now we know that the shell is very much a living part of the tortoise.
Mm.
Don't paint lead paint on your tortoise shell. You know, it's not to be done. So we know lots more about them. But Albert is in fact quite a petite tortoise, so he's quite easily managed, as it were. But some people do keep huge tortoises. So they're all varying sizes, varying colours. Some of them are all sorts of brilliant colours on their faces and on their shells. They're amazing, really. You know, looking into them, as I did for the book, because we've also got interesting facts at the back of the book, hopefully interesting anyway. you look into them, and for example, these turtle cousins have been on the Earth for 250 million years, Anna. They predate the dinosaurs. You know, they're an incredible creature, incredible.
And how are they with humans? I mean, I assume each tortoise can differ, but how is Albert with you? Does he like to be touched? Is he affectionate in any way, or does he keep himself to himself all the time?
They tend to keep themselves to themselves, but will, in the wild, they will occasionally share burrows together. But Albert's quite sociable. He likes to have his chin tickled a bit, and the back end of his shell he likes to have scratched quite a bit. And we can feed him by hand. He will give you a nasty nip every now and then. They don't have teeth, but they have a beak, which sort of, you know, you can then see the similarity or the evolution, if you like, of how they became birds, you know, over the years. So he has a beak, but it does give you a nasty nip. You know, it doesn't necessarily draw blood, but it'll give you a nasty pinch on your finger. But, you know, you can feed him by hand, dandelions and a bit of cucumber or whatever he's having, salad mainly. He's quite sociable with us and likes to, you know, we think he recognises us as well when he looks up and such. Aww. Like. And it's all quite sweet, really.
And can he be left for periods of time? Like if you were to go on holiday, does somebody need to come in and look after him, or do you just need to leave extra food?
He goes to his holiday home, I have to say. Okay. We've got friends with another tortoise. And he goes off to his holiday home, so he packs his little bag and off he goes. they do need to be cared for. Although they will... You know, they're great survivors, and he will eat grass on the lawn and such like, but no, they do need looking after, which is partly the backstory as well to Albert Upside Down, because genuinely, Albert and other tortoises will, every now and then, they'll overstretch, they'll try and climb a rock or something, and they flip over, so they end up on their back. And so normally a human will very gently put them back on their feet if one's around, or in the wild, they tend to use their head, they sort of lean back with their head and push and get a rocking motion and can sometimes right themselves that way. But I got to thinking, well, what if no one was around? What if the little garden creatures had to team up and help Albert get back on his feet?
Absolutely. Interesting idea. So what kind of age is the book aimed at, would you say?
We're saying 3+. But as I also said, there's slightly older readers in the back. There's these sort of interesting facts, which hopefully will spur further discussion and further sort of looking into other books about tortoises and turtles and wildlife, really.
Yeah. They were one of the first living things to visit the moon, for example.
They were. Two Russian steppe tortoises went on a thing called the Zond 5 mission with some other creatures, and they orbited the moon. Yeah, so they up they went. They came back apparently unscathed. So another great survival story for tortoises.
Yeah. So this book, Albert Upside Down, is the first in a series. Do you know how many you're going to do in the series?
Well, certainly 4 at the moment. We hope more. Book 2 comes in October of this year, and then 2 more next year, April and October again. And book 3, the artwork is nearly done for that already. So we're motoring on, and we're very excited. You know, it took me a long time, as you said in your introduction, to get a book deal. All the time I was working in television, and prior to that in journalism, I was writing all sorts of things. I was writing I wrote novels, I wrote other children's stories, other picture books, always, every now and then, trying to get them published, trying with agents, trying with publishers. All fell on stony ground, unfortunately. And then, luckily, I had this idea. I spoke to the illustrator, Owen Clark, who's a wonderful illustrator, and I had worked with him before on a couple of animation projects. One, a very different thing, a grown-ups animation thing called The Bruvs, which we do together. And he said, yeah, I'll have a go at the illustrations. And he does the illustrations as oil paintings originally. So they're all original oil paintings, which are then, you know, put into technology to make them work in the book. And he came up with the look of Albert, which everyone at the so far seems to be saying is rather lovely and, you know, sort of a bit retro and just really nice. The pictures are so rich, you know, there's so much going on. All the little animals have their own little faces. There's action going on away from the main action. So there's lots for children to look at and whatever. And the other great thing, Hannah, I would say, the other great thing for parents, grandparents, uncle, aunts, who are going to read this probably to little ones, is it's not too long. You know that thing with picture books, and we've all done it if you've read to children, where it's page after page and they're going more, and you which I wouldn't begrudge a child. You know, I'm all for encouraging children to read and be read to and to get into words and books and such like, but sometimes you just want to say, that's it, good night, lights out.
Yes.
It's not too long, I would say.
Brilliant.
But hopefully very enjoyable and worthy of multi reads, you know, keep coming back to it. People are saying that, you know, I'm not bribing people endlessly at the moment. There are some wonderful reviews coming in from people who've invested in it, and I'm very grateful. I'm just a big kid all over again, Hannah. It's taken ages to get to this point, and I'm just thrilled.
Yeah, so nice. And I'm glad you mentioned Owen, because I was going to mention his drawings. They really, or paintings, as you say, they really are fabulous, and obviously key with a picture book, that the pictures need to be really good, and they absolutely are.
Thank you. They totally are. He brings it to life. It's amazing. And we were lucky enough as well, by the publishers Graphic, who have been wonderful working with us, to do their first venture into animated ebook as well.
Oh.
So Albert exists as an animated ebook, and the extra joy for me was to do the silly voices for the narration for that. So it's great. I was able to play all sorts of games there with the characters, and it's just a joy, you know. Albert Upside Down, I hope, is the start of much more to come.
So do you have a voice for Albert then? Does Albert have a voice?
Well, I do, and I've had to do it fairly simply, I have to say, because you've got to try and repeat it then, haven't you? That's the thing.
Yeah.
So the idea is that illustrated Albert, picture book Albert, is a good deal younger than real Albert. So he's quite an enthusiastic, youngish tortoise, so he's all about, oh, do be careful, please, you know, that sort of thing. But the great fun is the other characters, really, because I can only do voices if I imagine a famous voice. So, for example, for anyone that remembers the name or the names, there's a spider who comes down on a thread to say something, and I imagine that he is a cross between Leslie Phillips and Terry Thomas. So he comes down and he just goes, hang on. And then the worms are all a bit Sid James in the Carry On films. They're sort of, you know, earth workers, and they're all a bit Cockney or blimey like Sid James in some of the Carry On films. So it's a great joy to do all that.
Oh, I bet. Well, it's been a great joy to chat with you, Ian Brown. Thank you so much for joining us. If listeners want to get a copy of Albert Upside Down, it's a really fabulous picture book for children, and not too long for the parents, which is great. Ian, thanks so much for joining us on the book show.
It's an absolute pleasure, Hannah. Thank you indeed.